found this in Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's
chip for heads.
In my gravity boots, I'm stuck walking the hole with a pounding in my skull. Ain't nobody knows which way the solar wind blows. Better than a man being blown.
The Shintaholics. We're recording in Shavrard Gobel Sheet Vault, the coldest place to record the podcast.
The coldest place you ever want to go.
Coldest place you freeze the balls on.
Hello.
Hello.
We are in Sweden.
The made in Sweden. It's the Shavrard Global Seed Vault. It's the ark where you keep the seeds. That way when Khan kills us all and the world gets messed up, we can go back to Seed Vault. It's like, I want an apple tree. There's an apple seed in there. We have no apple trees anymore.
Yeah, why don't they call it hoth? Why don't they just call it cold?
Cold, yeah. Well, we are Synthaholics.com. I am David_J_Duncan. The show is at Synthaholic Duo. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com.
I'm at Blackbird2004. I'm Aaron O'Brien, if you didn't know who I was.
Ah, you forgot.
Oh, great. Start it over.
Well, we do have a Patreon. We are Synthaholics.com. We're Patreon.com/Synthaholics. If you want to join the Facebook conversation, jump over to Facebook.com/groups.Synthaholics. And today we've got two guests with us. We've got...
I'm Josiah Leroy of the Geekiverse. I'm at Josiah D. Leroy, D. Leroy on Twitter and at @_Geekiverse as well. Thanks for having us.
And we've got...
And I'm Holly Michelle. I am with the Artful Gremlins. You can find them on Twitter at Artful Gremlins. And you can find me at hollymichelle.iconvoice.com and on Twitter and Facebook at Holly Michelle V.
Well, you should have heard both these lovely voices before, because we had Josiah on our episode 2 and episode 3 talk. And we've had Holly here on our Halloween 1 episode and Worst of the Worst Part 2.
That's right. Yeah, well, welcome. We always love to have guests and that we could all talk about Star Trek together and geek out.
Yes.
This is something we want to call Trek Noobs, because Josiah is brand new. Have you seen the movies? Like the J.J. Abrams reboots.
My Star Trek experience would be the 3 recent films. Star Trek Nemesis. I'm sorry. And that's about it. The occasional TV show here and there. But really, this was my first dive in.
Like, where you, like, sat there and watched it from beginning to end?
And knew what I was looking at.
And it wasn't like you just, like, caught it walking through the room.
Correct. This was sit down. Like, David was like, Josiah, you have homework. Watch this, or you're not on Star Trek Noobs. So I did it. Because I want to be on the show.
Yeah. Well, and, just to clarify, you know, you're a big sci-fi fan. You love all the kind of that world. But just... You know, I think it also has to do, Dave, primarily with the age group. I think a lot of people, like Josiah's age...
You said 90 earlier on the other show.
I am 90.
So like...
You're 90.
Yeah.
90-year-olds normally do not like Star Trek.
What is the Star Trek you're talking about?
They're trekking into the stars.
They're old curmudgeons.
It's a wagon train.
From the Swedish shop at the coldest spot.
What the fuck is that shit?
Oh, man, 90-year-old me is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So, no, I'm 26, but, yeah, maybe that has to do with it a little bit.
I think it does, honestly.
My colleague...
I mean, the last Star Trek show went off the air almost 16 years ago.
Yeah. We're getting a new one, though.
So you're like 10. You're like 10 when the last one went off the air. Right. So, I mean, Star Trek probably was barely on your radar, except for maybe the movies.
He didn't give a shit.
Movies.
No, one of my good friends, Pete over at the Geekiverse, he is a huge Star Trek fan. Not as in-depth as you guys, I think, but very, very close.
We had Pete, who you mentioned, on our Grumpy Unification.
Yep. So, and I think he's going to be on your show again, but he is... he's kind of spurred that in me a little bit, along with hanging with you guys in the last few months. So
yes, we're having Pete back to talk about Year of Hell
in
February.
Right. I apologize in advance.
And Holly, isn't really a noob to Star Trek. She's
a pro.
She makes her dogs watch it when she's not at home.
I
That's
do.
Right. Yeah.
I like that.
She instills
Michael
logic in her
comes
dogs.
Home and he's like, "Why is Star Trek on?
Why
Don't
wouldn't
worry
it?
About it.
Why wouldn't it be on?
Yeah, why would it not be on? Is the real right? question.
But much like the previous thing we recorded today, Robbie is not here with us. He was going to join us, and Holly from Artful Gremlins is kind of filling his spot today. So thank
yes.
you both for coming.
No
Although
problem.
We're here at your place, Josiah.
That's right. We're hosting it at Studio 129, the coldest studio in the world. But yeah, you can listen to that episode, Nerds of the Roundtable, and hear a spirited, if not hard, message from Robbie Palmer.
Yes.
Hard it's... being operative.
Whether or not it's hard or not still.
I just got that.
That's an Easter egg.
It may be jelly.
That's an Easter egg for later.
You got to find it. That's rude.
Yes.
That's so rude.
That's an Easter egg for Geeks of the Round Table, so go check that out. The first episode will be
Nerds of the
Round Table.
With a K.
Right. With a K, yes.
Nerds
because
the
I came
table,
up with that.
Table.
It was a group thing.
That's what
we're able to do routines and over teens and table.
So, silliness aside, we're all happy to be here, but we are talking about the original series,
Galileo 7.
Galileo 7. Thank you.
Actually, can
episode 16, right?
Yeah. Okay. Of season 1.
No, it's season 1, episode 13.
13.
I could be wrong about that.
I think it's 16.
It could be right.
I don't know.
And this aired on
the news was showing us.
This aired on January 5th, 1967.
Wow.
Well, give us your first impressions on it. Like as someone
without getting too in depth,
sure.
We're going to talk about it.
You know what? And I'm going to be so awkward when it comes to talking about it because there's finer details that I'm so like, oh yeah, this guy and that person and that. So I hate to sound like that, but
oh, I mean, most of them are those people. I mean, there's only two main characters on the landing party. So I mean,
you know, well, I'll say this: William Shatner was a pretty man.
He was a very good-looking man back in the day.
Damn, you know. He is coming to Buffalo.
I know.
Nickel City Con.
I'm going to sit on his lap.
See what pops up.
All right.
It's like Santa Claus.
Get this grown man off my lap.
Check out this captain's log. Anyway. I'm here all day, folks. I enjoyed the episode. I sat down to watch it with my dog. I don't know if he enjoyed it as much as I did, but I did. And obviously, you know, 1967, like you said, so
you
some
gotta,
of the stuff...
You got to kind of go back.
Take it with a grain of salt
yes.
in terms of the how it looked.
Yes.
I actually think it looks relatively good.
For the most part.
Yeah.
Well, they really go back and CG, you know, all your external shots.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
the Netflix like, show.
It definitely looked, you know, pretty solid. There were... A little. It was one connected storyline here, but with two divisions, kind of.
Yeah.
Obviously, with Kirk and Spock mm-hmm. trying to get back together there. I really, really liked Leonard Nimoy's performance. This was my first time seeing him in something Star Trek, just because I've been away from Star Trek, other than the rebooted films here.
I think this was a great one to put you into, because I know you'd seen the three reboots.
Mm-hmm.
So you know who Spock is, and you know who the characters are.
Totally.
But this one is like very Spock-heavy, so it was actually Aaron's idea.
It's yeah.
very brilliant
what
one
a,
to,
it was
to,
a great
to,
intro
to throw you into
me.
Star Trek.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you got to see really Spock... I think he was kind of the primary character.
Yeah,
in the episode.
And this is, and I want to get into that a little further,
sure.
more we talk about. But Spock's character is so interesting in this for so many reasons.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of stuff to talk about with him when it comes to how he operates with his, you know, his logic and maybe that lack of emotion.
Yeah,
and his crew kind of challenging that a little bit.
Absolutely,
I didn't like that.
Yeah,
you didn't like,
I mean, I want you to finish.
No,
you didn't like that. You didn't like that he was challenged.
No, well, I didn't like the amount of like the way the crew did it.
Yeah, how they
you don't like the, how they were subverting him the entire time
yeah,
he was there,
shitting on him constantly.
well,
it's kind of mean. It is mean to Spock, but
I think it was a desperation kind of thing. And I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I just didn't like it.
That's fair. That's fair. I also. Liked Lieutenant Uhura was
mm-hmm.
not in it a ton, but you know, seeing her was great.
Yeah.
Scotty, like to me, this is great seeing the origins of these characters because I think about it. My base knowledge of Star Trek revolves around this new trilogy that we
sure,
have.
Sure.
So it was awesome going back and seeing where did these characters really get their influence from? Seeing Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner in their glory days, so to say. Like, I really am happy that this ended up working out and I got to watch that.
Yeah.
Now I'm into, you know, I'm able to see something else that will just expand my geekdom, if you will.
Yeah, exactly.
This is one of my favorite. In fact, when we went back on our favorite shows, this was one of that hit.
Yeah, like our first episode. Yeah, our favorite.
This is one of my favorites. Yeah. So, yeah.
I think this is the first time I've seen the episode since we did that, though.
Shame on you.
There's 700 something episodes of Star Trek, man.
Right. Just real quickly, though, Dave, before we get into it, I just want to bring out the one news Star Trek Discovery that I saw.
There was something new?
Yes. The Toronto-based union, the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees websites, lists that the dates that they're going to start filming up in Toronto.
Oh, the 29th. I did see that. The 29th is when they're going to start filming.
Actually, it says the 24th to September 7th, and they will all be up there. So if you want to
September 7th?
That's what it says.
Wow.
September 7th. So they're going to be releasing them.
Probably. Well, they're still making them. That's
crazy.
It's kind of typical to do that as the series progresses. You know, they do them almost like in half seasons or
quarter seasons. But it's only like 10. It's only like 10 or 13 episodes. That seems like a long time to shoot for only a couple episodes.
I don't know.
I mean, if they were doing like 27 episodes, I can see them taking that long. But.
So they've called the production is called Green Harvest. That's the code name.
Star Wars was Blue Harvest.
I was just going to say.
Yeah, no, I know.
Y'all got that blue milk?
This green Harvest.
Oh, maybe there'll be lots of Orion milk.
It could be. So we don't know.
Orion's are green girls.
I was going to say, it sounded dirty, whatever it was.
From here on out, just no one, everything don't get over here is dirty. So anyways. this is the episode starts off that they're en route to Marcus III with a cargo load of medical supplies.
And a guy with a fruity cape.
Yeah, High Commissioner Ferris.
Is that the guy that is kind of overlooking
Kirk?
Yeah, just riding his jock the
whole
time.
He's a dick.
He's
yeah.
a dick. I am
just
like
him. Looking at him. Just jettison him.
Yeah, it would be great if they could do that.
Maybe if you wanted to get him there faster, put him in a torpedo tube and just shoot him there.
That actor, he played it like... He was the baddie the whole time. Like, he just played it like he had some ulterior motive.
Technically, yes,
like,
but his motive's not really bad.
No.
It's just that he's... So his motive is that he's supposed
to... Kirk was kind of irresponsible. He's like, yeah, we're sending them out to an anomaly we don't understand. We don't know what's going to do to our ships or instruments. And we're on a timetable.
Yeah, I mean, it was
sort of irresponsible on Kirk's...
Where did they go? I'm sorry.
Okay, let me just bring this out. Okay, so they're supposed to deliver the medical supplies to the Marcus III... And they have basically a plague at this New Paris colony. And what happens is they run into a quasar-like, this is what they call it.
A quasar-like
anomaly. Now,
it looked like a quasar with a nebula.
I'm going
to
talk about quasars later on because it technically doesn't make a lot of sense, but we'll get into that further. So
it looked cool, whatever it was.
They're
it was very green and very cool looking.
They're ahead of schedule. And they run into this quasar, and they do have standing orders to investigate any quasar anomalies
run into.
So that's why they send out the shuttlecraft just to do some scanning. So they send out the shuttlecraft. It has Kirk, Scotty, McCoy, Lieutenant Landimer.
I gotta love Landimer. He freezes in the face of danger.
Gartano and Yeoman Mears.
It's pretty dead on.
So they all get on the shuttlecraft and they take off. And I do believe this might be the first time we see the shuttlecraft. I'm not
probably.
Entirely certain. So this is the first time we see the shuttlecraft.
I think so. Because I think that's what Guy said when we did the shuttlecraft, Where Art Thou?
Right. So they go out, and immediately after they take off, there is this huge electrical interference, this ionization, where the ship's systems go awry. It pushes the ship, and unfortunately...
Spock's like, give me the right reading.
The shuttlecraft gets thrown off course, and it loses its bearings, and they can't find out. So they have to make a landing on a
Communications
planet.
Don't work either.
And
on the planet in the center of this...
In this quasar-like phenomenon.
They'd be dead.
They would be dead, but we'll talk about that
first.
So... Riff-trek. So, obviously, the High Commissioner Ferris is on Kirk about this, and he says, we have to deliver these supplies, and you've lost these men, and obviously Kirk has to find them, And he makes this great comment. He goes, at least four complete solar systems in the immediate vicinity, and out there somewhere is a 24-foot shuttlecraft off course out of control. Finding a needle in the haystack would be child's play. It's a great line. You know?
So I do remember that.
Yeah, it's a great line. So there you go. The search is on for the shuttlecraft and if the crew members survived.
Gotcha.
But I mean, even right when the thing happened to them, like their communications weren't working at all, I was like, huh, it's not good.
Right.
Well, that always happens.
It's like when your cell phone loses service.
Oh, man.
Worst, you know?
Yeah.
Just like at the studio, I don't.
Mine is fine. I don't know what you're talking about.
So the Galileo is forced to make an emergency landing on Tarsus 2. It's a lone planet in the heart of the Murasaka 312 star system, which where the quasar is happening. So Scotty tries to make repairs, and then they send out the two dudes to go see if there's anything outside.
Cool. Yeah, he's go look and see if there's anything alive on this barren rock world.
No, you do it.
Scotty basically says that they've lost a lot of fuel, and they would be unable to reach escape velocity off this planet with the fuel that they currently have. So.
Isn't there fuel antimatter? Wouldn't that just like cause massive explosions if they were just
Dave,
leaking?
Dave, they don't have it worked out yet. So,
are they talking about gas? Talking about like plutonium? Like what fuel are they leaking?
I don't know.
Smarty pants over here.
So they have to lighten the load, so they're trying to decide how they're going to what they can do.
Three adult males need a GTFO. Let the yeoman stay. She's hot.
Yeah, that's basically it.
She was attractive, by the way.
And she wouldn't be enough weight to get off. You'd have to give like
she's a stick figure.
You'd have to give two women and then two men. That's too many people to lose.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable losses for seven people on the ship.
Yeah.
That's right. I agree. While they're out looking around...
She was
around,
there for eye candy, most definitely.
Absolutely, she was.
Latimer and Gartano hear these strange grinding noises, and then through the dense fogs, and the caveman-like creatures attack them. Giant cavemen.
They're like giant caveman slash bear...
Apes kind of thing.
Bear ape. Man bear ape.
Nice.
Unfortunately, Latimer is hit in the back with a giant spear.
And Spock cannot stop talking about how awesome the spear is and comparing it to the American Indians, like, bow and arrow thing.
Right.
It's
right,
awesome.
Right.
Spock is just amazed.
And meanwhile, just before this even happened...
Spock is strong. He pulled that thing out with no problem.
Oh, yeah. Spock's a pretty strong guy.
That's all that styrofoam. The lifting weights.
Those were massive spears, by the way.
Yeah,
like,
no,
massive.
The spearhead was like as big as like my forearm.
It was crazy. I hate that I'm about to say this, but crazy how long they were as well. You know?
Yeah.
Lieutenant,
you were bracing for something like it was going to happen.
I'm sure he was.
I left it on the table.
Lieutenant Bulma, though, the whole time has been giving Spock grief, even before the attack. Happens kind of like not like
what do you do, Spock? Huh? How do you get out of here?
Because he, allocates, you know, he's like, we're gonna have to pick people who are gonna stay behind, and
right,
we,
I'm gonna pick straws. And he's like, well, I will come at the reason logically. Well, logically, you three aren't the main characters, you're gonna right? stay behind.
You have less experience than me, you are not a commander.
He's like, I am more fit to pick than this random chance. Which, I mean, I give it to Spock. I mean, he is probably more fit to pick.
I love that slight arrogance, though, that he doesn't understand that he is arrogant.
Who, Spock?
Yeah.
Well, Spock doesn't know he's coming off. And it's the funny thing with Spock constantly is that he comes off like he's being a dick, but he's not really being a dick. He's just saying it as exact as possible, and he doesn't take account that
people have feelings.
People have feelings.
I don't care if it's going to piss you off. I'm going to say it because it is logical. You know, like, yeah. And I like that.
It's refreshing, but it's also if you got to be around that constantly, you'd be like,
what the fuck?
Come on, dude.
You know. I know, seriously, and I think seeing Leonard Nimoy, you know, get this role out, because that's obviously what he's known for, enhances my love of Zachary Quinto in the remakes.
Yeah, because he really tried to nail that and make it his own.
And it is his own.
Yeah.
It kind of harps back a little bit to what we saw on a lesser degree of the Joker. These actors always think that they have to knock it out of the park and make it their own, and in a way that's so crazy out there. And Zachary didn't have to do that with Spock.
But
and
Zachary also had the a huge fortune, luck, whatever, to like have Leonard Nimoy himself tutor him to be Spock in the first two films.
This is
like
a very
he was on set
role.
With him, like Quinto and him, like thinks of him as like a father, I think, almost.
But there's,
they got really close.
There's another
the
thing
together.
About it too, is like when you go see a band and a band plays a song, a cover song, I do not want to hear the note for note version of that song. Right. I want to hear that band do it.
The a way take on
they
it.
They do way. It. So if you're going to do, you know, a song by a famous band, I've seen bands that play it note for note and everything's right there, but it's like. Yeah, I could have just popped on the.
That's what like about Metallica, their garage album. Like it's all covers, but I mean it's Metallica.
I think
kind of doing it
such
their own
a.
Way.
When you hear a cover, you're right. You don't want to hear it string for string because that's the original.
Yeah.
When you hear a band that has their own sound, it's very well established, and they make it their own, and they do it in a good quality way.
Right.
Sometimes you like it almost better than the original,
right.
And you appreciate it so much more. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't agree more, and that's what he did with this.
That's goal. Exactly what I'm saying.
That's exactly.
He took it. He obviously went with the feeling of it, but he kind of went in his own way. But that being said, Spock is having a hard time connecting with these with his crewmates on the shuttlecraft.
Isn't it his, like, first mission in charge?
Like, it's his first time where he's really been in command in a stressful situation.
Right. This is, at least that's where McCoy,
I mean, like, I'm sure,
McCoy kind of gives him, like, this is your big chance. This is your big chance to show.
I'm sure he's been, Kirk's given a command probably before now, I guess, maybe. I mean, I did recall that,
what you were saying, Aaron, with the, you know, this is your chance kind of thing. Like, almost like, hey, you know, you can rise up the ranks. And I never saw it that way.
Right,
until he
right.
mentioned that.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of times that's what happens. And you hear the stories is that, like, they get this this bad thing that happens. And the, you know, commanders or whoever's in charge turns it around and saves people. And then they get accommodation and promoted. So, but Spock's not really aware. I mean, he may be aware of that, but he's not. That's not what he's thinking of.
I also love, like, you know, I'm neither, you know, excited by the idea of command, nor am I frightened by it. It just exists.
Yeah.
The thing is, with his role, it is what it is.
And the interesting thing about Spock is always that you always have to understand he doesn't have an ego behind it all, or at least his ego is diminished enough that it doesn't. Things that doesn't bother him. So, like,
he's not driven by his ego.
Right. So when Bowman is coming at him sideways about stuff, he's like, he doesn't. The fact that he's challenging him, he's not angry that he's challenging him. He's more angry that, or not even angry, he's just like, you're being irrational because I'm in command. There's nothing to talk about here.
Yeah,
you know?
Just do what I say, I'm doing everything the way it needs to be done because this is how we're going to survive.
This is going to give us the best opportunity to do that and accomplish our mission, you know?
Exactly. Or at least what he just carries out is the most logical, efficient way, which may or may not be true. But so. they take Latimer's body back after he's been killed. Meanwhile, obviously back up on the Enterprise, High Commissioner Ferris is just giving Kirk
flaunting his little bitty cape. It's like, my cape is better than yours because you don't have one.
I'm like, who is this guy?
And, yeah, he's obviously just there to just grind the wheels of aggravation and like that this has got
to
happen.
Just to make you feel for Kirk.
He's the Tarkin to the Krennic from Rogue One.
Yes, exactly. He's just there to make you. I mean, they could have done it without him, just that Kirk knows he has to leave in like 24 or 48 hours or whatever it was, the time period they had.
Kirk would have like bent that a lot more without someone looking over his shoulder, though.
But that being said, is that having Ferris there in constantly needling
enforcing
him,
yeah.
needling him is just it's aggravating, but it's also makes it compelling to watch at the same time. You're like, oh, just shut up, Ferris. He's trying to save his friends.
He's the vessel that keeps that show moving and the motivation behind showing the leadership for Kirk.
Exactly.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Kirk plays a little bit less of a significant role, I think.
He does. In this episode, Kirk is not very prominent. I mean, other than just him having
to deal with the guy.
Yeah.
Love some of the acting when it came to being frightened, like you kind of portrayed earlier, like just the looks on some of the actors and actresses' faces, I think were very good. But
ugh,
not as cheesy as I anticipated.
The guy just like the rock, the man bear.
Like, you can get up and run away, run back and run away again.
This thing called zigzag. Or you can press your back against the wall and just be a sitting target. I guess the set wasn't big enough probably for him to run back and forth for the camera to track him.
I was waiting for a fantastic scream to come across there.
The scream happened. It's just that he had to get hit first before he got screamed.
I'm gonna go with the poor direction, because there's a part where they're in the ship and they'd all just like, well, first the female does it. She like jumps on the floor and she's like looking up at him pleading like, no. And then like two of the other officers do it later on. And it's just like, okay, you don't have to throw yourself on the floor.
I know what scene you're talking about. Yeah. And that, you know, it's funny because it's weird, and we've talked about it sometimes, that the original series has this very silly
overacting type.
Overacts for the 60s. Like, you'll see it in like early Batman, the 60s Batman.
Oh, great.
But you
campy,
see,
but on purpose.
And I think it has something to do with also like on stage. Like acting, I think it has a lot to do, because I think a lot of these people came from
the stage,
and that's how they would like perform if they were going to do like Pippin or something like that. You know,
well, sure, but I mean, you gotta over exaggerate so people in the far back can see it.
TV was an evolving medium at this point, though, when it came to series like that. You know, obviously it had been around for some time, but really,
Star Trek was one of the first things that actually came up in color. I mean, that was one of the selling points of Star Trek, is that's why their uniforms are red, you know, yellow and blue, is because those are really vibrant colors, and that's why Star Trek the original series looks the way it does. Mm-hmm. All the shiny buttons, because it was like the selling point of the show. It was one of the first shows to be broadcast in color.
It looks good. I know, like, now if we're like really jaded comparing it, like, it's obviously, you can tell it was from the 60s, but like, I can get behind trying to get that perspective and saying, oh, this looks good.
Yeah.
It doesn't look bad. I mean, the probably the worst part about this episode is
the Galileo 7 shuttlecraft itself.
Actually, the Galileo doesn't bother me. It's the creatures, the ape men.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
And the rocks and stuff like that. It's a set, you know.
The best part of the Galileo shuttlecraft itself is the back of it. I love that weird landing gear that comes off the back of it.
Yeah.
That looks really legit.
I like the door.
You know, I think those.
The door's cool. Yeah, I like the door as well.
At the bottom, and then it came up.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, interrupt, but
no. All good. You got to interrupt us, Mark.
Yes, you do.
Because we will interrupt you.
That's what you need to do, so you can get your voice heard.
Yep.
So Spock obviously is dealing after Latimer dies, and he's talking about how the weapon was well made, and he says, and Bowman gets on him. He says, "My concern for the dead will not bring him back, Mr. Bowman."
You know what, though? That's like how I feel about death.
But I can appreciate the art.
I can relate to that. Like,
some big man bear pig had to carve this out.
Super cereal.
But, like, you know, you're trying to get off of a planet, and, you know, your people are dying, and you still have this big problem that you have to solve. Worrying
someone
about
has
it
to
is
be,
really not
someone's
got to
smell the roses or just appreciate the art.
They've
got to
be cold and calculating at that point, even if they don't want to be, right? You've got to move on.
I guess, like, the human part is like, okay, yeah, you really do need to appreciate
I love how Spock
life
is
and
also
respect them, but at the same time, just move on. Get off the planet.
Yeah, get off the planet. Nobody else has to die. But they do have to die. And
it's lucky, because they need to lose that weight on the ship.
Yeah,
it was unfortunately a very, my thought.
Right. But so they say basically that they're ready for Latimer's funeral, and Spock has no interest in doing the
He's
funeral.
He's like, I got shit to do.
Yeah.
I got orders to give.
Logically,
I got to look over Scotty's shoulder and make sure things are working.
So they all go out and do that. They do the funeral while Scotty and Spock are in there trying to repair the ship. And they had reduced the weight to about an extra. I guess they still only have 150 pounds still left to offload the ship. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Kirk has ordered that his shuttlecrafts that are searching, they've tracked down that it is the Tarsus planet, and where their last communication was, and that they're basically taking shuttlecrafts and they're literally going and scan or like flying around.
I love how nothing else is affected by the thing the way the first shuttlecraft was.
Right.
Well, the shuttlecraft was knocked off course and crashed on Tarsus, so there was damage in the crash. So,
well, but I mean, it didn't have control for a long time, though. I mean, it lost control like on the edge and it got sucked into the middle. That's what it seemed like it looked like.
Yeah.
But now the Enterprise flew to where the planet was, and now everyone thinks working more or less fine.
Well, the Enterprise is a much bigger ship.
They're not able to scan or search or communicate.
Yeah, but the shuttles are still working.
They're having issues with the teleportation, you know.
Yeah, the transporter.
So, I mean, they are having their issues. But.
Yeah, no, there's more issues there, but the issue for I think those shuttlecrafts are working because they never took off. Like they were still in the shuttle bay, so they never had an issue, like nothing happened to them. They were like,
yeah.
They didn't get damaged from the crash whatsoever. So from there they again hear the stone scraping, and the monsters are obviously going to attack again. Once
boom, 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 and they start hammering the top of the shuttle with a big rock.
That happens before, but Spock decides that a show of force would be a good way to scare
But
off.
Don't kill them.
Don't kill
because
them.
Because Spock says something about how, like, I'm just amazed at your capacity just to want to kill things.
Right, right. So he tries to scare
you were peaceful people.
He tries to scare him off, and he does scare him off with a... firing the phasers in separate directions so that they scare them enough that they run away.
Right.
It's like,
our stick's bigger.
Beware. they may be frightened now, but they'll return later in greater numbers.
Right, exactly. They might return in greater numbers.
Are they sand people?
They may be.
They cover their tracks.
Sand people ride in single file to cover the tracks.
They'll lead them home. Boom.
So they go to they unfortunately he sends another guy out to do watch by himself while they're still making repairs on the shuttlecraft, and
that person's never gonna die.
Gartano unfortunately he doesn't make it as well, and
he pushes his back to the rock and just takes a punch to the face.
I think it's a spirit of the face. It's in his back when they find him, right?
No, he's the guy that runs off.
Laying on the rock, that's right.
Yeah. And then he just like pushes himself back to the rock and is like, please don't hurt me. I'm too pretty to die.
He doesn't run off. He was told to stay put.
Yeah.
And then
converge
on him. And he, like, backs into a corner, and he's like, meow.
That's what I was referencing earlier. It's like that really, really long time where it's like, all right.
Could
all
you
right,
run?
All right.
Could you dodge?
Right.
You know, it doesn't look like he's that fast. The guy took, like, 10 minutes to walk up to him.
And he stands in one spot, and he gets, like, six spears thrown at him, and they all miss.
His hand gets hit by the rock, and his hand's crippled, and he's like, I can't use my hand. Then he falls down, and he's totally fine. He's trying to climb up the rock, it doesn't work. Turns around, he's petrified. It's like, no.
It reminded me of, well, you know what, I'll say this. When Spock kind of said, you know, you're staying behind, there was a little bit of emotion there, because like, okay, this guy's getting fucked.
I know how to get rid of that extra 150 pounds off that shuttlecraft.
Like, go patrol.
Spock goes like this, sizes him up. You look like you're about 170 pounds. You will stay behind. No reason. Just saying.
It's like
live long and prosper, though it won't be long.
It's like that meme where they've got the three red shirts and Kirk's pointing up like this, and the meme says, "Go, please go dig three graves up there. I'll explain later."
Yes,
right, exactly.
Oh, pencil your names in on this.
Although Gartano was a yellow shirt, so no red shirts got killed in this.
No, that's true.
So
I guess Scotty was your only red shirt.
No,
well, Scotty and the woman, but
and
I mean,
yeah.
They're not going to kill the they're not going to kill the hot girl.
And they shouldn't.
That's right. They
Nor
should,
should
not.
They.
She had a really big chicken pox scar, though.
Oh. Okay.
What? How did you know that?
It just looked like she had like a chicken pox
on
her cheek.
Oh my
God. I thought you were going to pull out some fact and be like, yeah, that was from chicken pox she had when she was little.
I do have some history on her, but I'll get into that later.
Okay, nice. Question about her.
So anyways, so they find his phaser laying on the ground where they left him after they hear his screams. And they go to find him, and unfortunately they find the phaser, and then they find his body laying in a rock later on, so far off. Yeah.
Spock sends the two back to the ship.
Yeah.
And Spock right. goes.
Oh, and he gives him the phaser because Scotty has figured out that, hey, we can use the energy from the phasers to make an awesome gun.
Which is,
I mean, fuel the for
fuel,
the.
Yeah.
Which is great because you think about it for another plot device is now you're on a hostile planet. Let's take your only weapons, which could probably just cream most of them, and now we're going to use that all for fuel for your ship.
Just gather up the spears and throw them back.
It's good writing in the sense that. You have that element where you're taking away your only weapons, and this is all in or else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You now have a time limit, essentially. You're trying to, I think, you know, Scotty's looking, he's like, you know, maybe an hour or two left before this gets finished as they're kind of trying to get in the shuttle. And I think that adds a little urgency to it.
Right.
So it was very creative writing on all fronts there.
Yeah, it's a great thing about the original series, especially first season and some of the second season. The writing is usually pretty tight.
They had to have good writing because, like, it was shoestring budget. Even though, like, they were, like, breaking edge special effects for the time, on the special effects they did have, it was they all this other where their money went, and so everything else had to be a strong story. Otherwise, it just wouldn't work.
Yeah,
I mean, Star Trek was good because of its limited budget, because they had to figure out ways around it.
Great writing.
Well, unfortunately, the big ape men come and while they're inside, and they start attacking the ship, banging on the ship, and that's where they decide they're going to charge the hull with. Electricity.
Although I don't understand why they're like so scared of a rock. I mean, this thing should be made to stand like at least maybe a little bit torpedo or phaser bombardment, but they're scared of man with rock.
Well, it's a big rock.
Yeah. And it was a big rock.
It's a big rock.
He's a big man.
And the ship has already taken damage.
Yeah, the ship already crash landed, so I think they're just trying to make sure that.
It doesn't get any worse. I guess I'll give them that.
So they charge ship and the creatures run off, but only for a little bit. Unfortunately, at that time, up in the Enterprise, they're just completely run out
Time's
of time.
Time's up.
They got to go. They've run out of time. They have to leave. And Kirk makes the great thing. Says, all right, make way for Marcus III at best space speed. And, like, Sulu turns around like, what?
Space speed? What does that mean?
But he's also like, I still have a shuttle that's out looking. Oh, yeah, he's calling him back. Obviously, Kirk is delaying as far as he can. And Ferris is just like, you're delaying. Let's get this done. We got to go. I know your friends are out there, but we have to leave. But Sulu thinks, best space speed? Like, what speed? What does that mean?
So. Impulse. Half impulse.
And meanwhile, while they're leaving the system, they're, like, scanning the whole time. But in the meantime, the Galileo does have enough that they take off. They run into the creatures again.
They actually dropped their boosters, like their jet boosters, to get them out of the
Right. Well, atmosphere. They get out of the atmosphere those. After another tangle with the ape men just before they take off. And they fly out into space, and they realize that there's no way they're going to see them. They can't escape orbit. They have enough fuel to make a landing, and that's pretty much it. They're going to live out there.
Orbit once, then land.
But Spock, at the last minute, jettisons the rest of his fuel all at once, and it creates a flare. Sulu sees it, and then they realize.
I love how Sulu sees it. He's just flicking that one button back and forth over and over again. It's like. Like
he's refreshing his speed.
Refresh.
Oh, is that F5?
Refresh.
Oh,
refresh.
That, that must have been the F5 button. He's just looking at it back and forth. refresh. Look, there's somebody there.
Yeah, and obviously they go and they go back towards the Galileo, but unfortunately the Galileo is crashing into the atmosphere, will burn up, and they beam them up at the right, just at the right.
Just point. Right before they turn into crispy fried chicken.
Yes.
I love the sweat there.
Yeah.
I know, and the woman's like, it's getting really hot.
Yeah.
And you're like,
so take off all your clothes.
Oh, no, sorry. I knew without the iota of a doubt that that's where David was going with that.
Yeah.
I hope this is only my third episode of Sithaholics.
You knew.
But for sure, when Helmy mentions the woman, I'm like, all right, David's either going to talk about taking clothes off, naked, something.
I'm a terrible person, I guess.
And you'd be right.
Make you a terrible person. It just means I'm getting to know you, David. Oh.
Getting to know you. Getting to know all about you. Getting to like you. Hoping that you too like me. I've waited years to sing that on the internet.
You, it's been
you're welcome.
So, and then there, at the last.
Don't hate me, Holly.
Don't hate, appreciate.
Too late. So, the last scene we got on the bridge. That Kirk confronts Spock about his actions on the Galileo when he jettisons the fuel. It's like, was that an act of desperation?
He's like, well, it's God. Logical because I figured there's no thing we could do. So
you know, but the thing
I love
is,
that answer.
It is kind of logical.
Yeah,
I'm not going to say. I mean, maybe there is desperation in it, but
emotion can be tied to logic. In yeah, a way, and he finds it there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I also love the laughter at the end. That was almost like they should have been. The camera should have panned out like it was a 90s.
And then Spock being in the corner like... Wow.
Spock just saying, you mother...
You all suck.
I was sitting here like not with my hands crossed, nodding. I know it's not a visual medium. That's kind of where everyone starts.
No, but... You know, but but Spock runs into this all the time.
That's what he does. He folds his arms and it's just like, you know...
But Spock runs into this all the time, and it kind of pissed me off about the original series is that he's the scapegoat that all the humans can make fun of. Mm-hmm. It'd be like working with like a person from a different race in your office and then always making fun of that person of their...
I don't think they ever did that on Next Gen, though.
No, they never did on Next Gen.
They never did, like, the laugh off screen.
But they always make fun of Spock at the end. Or yeah. Oh, not always, but pretty often. Right.
Kirk might as well have turned to him and said, whatever, nerd.
Right? Like,
that was it.
You know, yeah. You know what? Yeah. You know, if the Kirk-Spock slash fiction thing, like, that scene where he's got his arm around them and the way he's looking at Spock, like, I think I've seen, like, a funny meme, like, on Facebook. It's like, is Kirk looking at Spock or a woman? Where they just feature, like, just they isolate Kirk,
yeah,
and the way he's looking at Spock or a woman is like he's looking at Spock or a woman. It's like a game almost. Like I'm like, because it's almost creepy the way he looks at Spock.
Yeah, nice logic
in the romantic way.
You gotta love it.
So just a couple things about the show. I mean, so that's how the show wraps up. Obviously, they lost Latimer and Gartano.
They will be not missed.
Nobody cared.
And, because they all laughed at the end. And it was funny.
And Bowman got knocked down a couple ranks, and he's working on a garbage trawler somewhere.
But you know, the nice yeoman, she was hanging out with Uhura, like listening over her shoulder as all the fun stuff at the end was happening.
The banter.
As Uhura is pointing and laughing at Spock.
Yeah.
Like, it's really funny.
Like, I used to date that. Oh, my God.
They're like falling over laughing at this point.
Yeah.
You know,
good thing Kirk's got a big cup
again, to share. But again, that's another product of 60s.
Yeah. Like
they got to wrap it up with a little light laugh, you know?
Yeah.
Let's
two
make
people
it funny.
Died. Let's have a joke.
Let's have a laugh. Our comrades are dead.
It's just like on the Doomsday Machine. It's just like, let's just you know, wax poetically and laugh a little bit after my best friend died.
My best friend. Well, I don't know if he was best friend.
I mean, but they seemed like they were good friends,
though. Stole his car and ran it into dumpsters.
I mean, that was before. But before that point, they were good friends, you know?
Well, a couple things. The writer of this is Oliver Crawford, and he...
Kudos.
Yes, he did very well. And he... well, this is kind of a rewrite, I guess, based on the film called Five Came Back. It's a 1939 film, which co-starred Lucille Ball. And
Is interesting.
Yeah, because Lucille Ball was the person, and I'm sure you don't know this, but Lucille Ball was...
instrumental in making Star Trek a thing.
Yeah. What?
Really?
Yes.
So,
hang on.
Gene Roddenberry was pitching this to the studios, and they weren't having it. And they made the first pilot, and you can watch the first pilot of Cage, and it has Spock in it, and that's about it.
That's nobody else from
it
Star
has,
Trek.
It has Pike from the reboots.
Captain Pike.
But he's a totally different person.
And Spock comes in and goes... Captain, I'm home. Captain! Where are you, Kirk?
Chase my sniper! Well, no, the studio...
Need to fight the Benjamin!
No redhead. There was a blonde and a brunette in the original pilot. Not a redhead.
I thought it was... Anyways, it doesn't matter. But what it comes down to...
Oh, wait, no, there was a redhead.
There was a redhead.
I was wrong.
It's fascinating, though.
So it got rejected by the studios. They said that it's too cerebral. Nobody's ever going to get this. And they passed on it.
Because she was head of Desilu Studios,
Lucille Ball.
She picked it up, and she convinced them to let them do a second pilot. And she was like, what can I do? Like, she would, like, sweep up the set and try to get the stuff off the set so they
Holy
could do
crap.
She was instrumental in getting Star Trek on the air.
She was without, the first nerd. Like she's
Without her, awesome. Without her, we would not have Star Trek.
Yes.
There's actually an episode of Enterprise you should watch, Carbon Creek.
Carbon Creek.
Carbon Creek, where
They're watching.
The Vulcans crash land on Earth in like the 50s or 60s or whatever, and there's one point where it's like, I can't go out tonight. I have to watch I Love Lucy.
Stop it.
Yes. It's a flashback to a thank you to Lucille Ball.
One thing I've liked about Star Trek in my obviously relatively limited exposure to that is that it's in our universe. You know, Star Wars is kind of all off on its own.
It's a different universe, totally long fiction. Time ago. We don't know anything about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Star Trek has these elements. You know, perfect example is Beastie Boys. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, that's classical music. I love that reference.
Yeah, it's
I love that reference.
Classical music, right.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I'm so happy you guys about the Lucille Ball stuff here.
Yeah, so she was in this movie called Five Came Back, and it was about a plane that crashed in the jungle and how they had to take the plane had to take off again and save the people.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's cool.
So, the other thing is the same writer, Oliver Crawford, he wrote Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, the guys with the half white, half black
faces. Yeah.
I just recently watched that. Oh, my God. What a great episode. It seems so silly when you watch it, but it's just like, oh, my God, it's just so heavy.
Yeah, it just hits you, and it's obvious to anybody.
Yeah,
when you watch it, what it's talking about. Yeah, it's so great.
The thing is, like, the guy who played in the 60s Batman movie, who played the Riddler, is the one of the, I don't want to call him a villain, but he's definitely like a kind of a bad guy. He's sort of
antagonist.
Like, yeah, there's these guys that they pick up, and one guy has
antagonist.
Antagonist.
Protagonist.
But the one guy has a black face on his left side and white face on his right side, and the other guy has the opposite. And they completely hate each other.
They're at war.
They had a war. And it's kind of making a comment about race relations in our world. And it's phenomenal. And it ends.
Maybe
so
we should do that as the next Trek Snoops.
Yeah, but it's
like
very
the other one you mentioned, though, with Lucille.
Oh,
the reference to
Carbon Creek. We did talk about Carbon Creek before.
Sorry.
Well, anyways.
It's been a year.
Yeah, it has been a year. We can revisit
it again.
The
noobs, you know? I'm the only noob, really, but, you know.
Yeoman Mears, who we all loved and adored on the shuttlecraft, she was actually the daughter of Ridgway Callow, who was the director of Gone with the Wind, and she appeared on that as in the film. She was actually in Gone with the Wind.
That's awesome. That's so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go.
Jeez.
Fun facts. Couple insights. So things you never knew.
Do.
My mother-in-law is a huge Lucy fan, so I'm going to have to bring that up.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we got our two guests here. I want to get your takes on this. So why don't we start with Holly? Like, you obviously
you're more familiar with Star Trek than Josiah.
You've seen it before. You're familiar with Spock, but like, what was your takeaway after watching this?
Well, I've always liked Spock. The fact that he uses his intellect to make decisions is always, I wouldn't say inspired me, but I like that. I live with anxiety, so sometimes I can't make a decision, and sometimes I need to use, like, logic to get through an issue. And so when he's kind of like, okay, I understand, like, yeah, sometimes you have to be emotional, you have to use, you know, not just your brain and your logic, but, you know, your feelings, you know, that was cool. It was interesting to see Spock like that.
It's an excellent character study. That's the greatest part about this whole episode for me. You get a character study on Spock.
Yeah.
It's like he's wrestling with his logic, which he's obviously that's paramount to him.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
And
I've made every choice exactly the right way, and things are still going wrong.
Yeah, which is interesting because that's how I live my life, and I'm like, everything I've done is right, but everything's falling apart.
Right. Yeah.
Vladimir got killed. Why would Vladimir get killed?
That's a great point with Spock. So. I think you have to have balance. Everything in moderation, right?
Which is the funny thing about that you say that, Josiah, is that the great thing about Spock, and a lot of people, I don't know if anyone thinks about this, but Spock has been around, his character has been around for so long that we see a a huge arc where he decides, and we get to Star Trek VI, he says logic is not, is just the beginning.
It's just the beginning of knowledge.
Yeah, right? It's just the beginning. It's not the end all be all. So at Star Trek
so
VI,
great
almost at the end of his Spock career, we kind of see him saying logic
isn't great, but it's not the,
you got to get past it. So it's, we see this wide arc of Spock becoming who he is and what's it's so fascinating.
That's such a great point. I love Star Trek VI, but I didn't think about that as a paragon or
juxtaposition,
the thesis to this.
Yeah, between the two.
That's really cool.
And the great thing about Spock or Leonard Nimoy and Spock being put together there is just that they're so not only do we see the exploration of the character, but over the years, but when you see Star Trek VI, and he's older and the crew's matured, you got to remember all the stuff that they did before. It's almost like all the stuff they went through. The Galileo crashing on Tarsus too.
Yeah,
and they were gonna leave their asses.
They're crazy.
The whole logic is not to be is the beginning of knowledge he's also trying to teach basically his replacement on the Enterprise,
which is a huge disappointment. But anyways,
but Tim Cattrall though.
It is Tim Cattrall, so that's nice too. So that's interesting. Josiah, you are familiar with Star Trek, but you're not as familiar with the original series. When watching this and walking away from it, what were your initial reactions?
So I wanted to jump into some of the older Star Trek stuff, whether it was the TV show or the movies, for a long time, and this was a very good prompt for me to do so.
Okay.
Pete gave me homework last year to go see Wrath of Khan, and I was like, Whatever, dude. Lame. David's like, hey, you got to watch it, and I watched
Wrath of Khan is great.
Maybe that's another one in the future we do.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed this, and putting myself in the shoes of either watching it back when it came out, so you kind of leave a little bit of the interpretation to knowing that it was a thing that came out in the late 60s, or even watching it today, it's still good. The writing holds up.
The writing is what makes this thing
great.
The
writing absolutely holds up.
I mean, the acting's good too, but the writing's good.
The direction can be questionable, but again, you just look at it and say, that's where it was, the time period.
Yes, exactly.
I enjoyed it very much. I liked seeing, I want to see more of Captain Kirk, so maybe you guys assign me an episode with that a little bit where he's prominent.
Sure.
But I will say I loved seeing Leonard Nimoy take over as Spock and really run the show, kind of as it was where they were in their predicament, and some of the side characters as well. So it was. I think this was a perfect entry point for you guys to start me off with in terms of making this a continuing thing.
The thing is that with you do got to kind of go in your time machine and say okay, this is 1967.
Take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it's the sets aren't great. Not everything's perfect, and there's some silliness that goes along with it, but. If the writing sound, which I, like I said, the first season and most of the second season is pretty good. I mean, you get a couple bad ones, but I had a friend that I got him into doing, watching the original series, and he was absolutely fascinated at the partnership and friendship between Kirk and Spock. He's just like, that is just, it's so amazing to watch. And you don't see it as much in this one because they're separated, but you more and more you become like how they're just so.
Well, and Kirk, Spock, and McCoy too.
Well, McCoy's important too.
He's like the third part of the triad.
Yeah, yeah. You need McCoy as well because McCoy's the passionate human, and Kirk's the bravado and
they're extremes.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't you see a little? I mean, that feels like that carries over, and again, my limited knowledge to the trilogy.
Absolutely,
here.
They were pulling from that, and they definitely said, "Well, these are the characteristics of these people."
And then they put them in the overdrive a little bit in the movies, is how the Plinkett videos.
Their relationship, not only to me, seeing this is timeless, but the writing, I think, just in anything in any medium, proves that it's timeless as well.
Well, same thing. If you go and watch the old black and white Twilight Zone, if you get a good episode, you're like.
Holy shit, that was good.
You're like, that's a great episode. And you're just blown away.
You can't be limited by the production or the technology of your time when it comes to writing.
Right, right.
It will hold up if it is quality.
If it's good, it's quality. And that's why sometimes I think that the new movies that come out nowadays that the production is through the roof, and it looks great, but then the story's like, where's the story?
Kind of like the Star Wars prequels, like we talked about earlier. It's like, you know, George Lucas, you know, the original Star Wars movies were good because he couldn't do everything he wanted to do.
Right, right.
As my Geekiverse crew, when it comes to anything, whether it's video games, movies, comics, it has to be story for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is my predominant thing. Production is a great second, but that's it for me. If it's a good story, I'm in.
Yeah,
and this was it. So I'm glad that I watched it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. Thanks so much for getting to view that and talking with us today, because it's fun to do. I mean, we've been talking about doing this for a long time, getting people who are newer into Star Trek who are into podcasting to come in and talk with us about Star Trek, you know, from a totally fresh perspective. Because, I mean, me and Aaron, I mean, we've been watching I can't remember not ever watching Star Trek. Yeah, that's how long I've been watching Star Trek for. So getting someone with that baby type perspective, like you're brand
watching,
new.
You're watching me walk for the first time, right?
It's like, right. Come.
Baby right. Josiah. He's walking.
You know, but like, you know, but like, you know, your first viewing, it's just like, it's a you're a blank canvas for what Star Trek is to you, other than the movies, which is its own thing.
It's awesome experiencing it with you guys, because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like this is Star Trek's your thing. Obviously, your podcast, but I'm saying...
A little bit.
In terms of...
It could be a problem, too, in my life, but I'm not going to talk about it.
That's a given. I mean, that's your favorite in any sort of fiction.
It's pretty high up there.
It's definitely up there. I mean, I model my facial hair after Klingon. I got long hair like Worf. I just got Klingon weapons for Christmas.
I grew up wanting to... I grew up
can now. Kill people like Klingon.
Yeah,
there you go.
I don't know. I mean...
I grew maybe. Up wanting to be Kirk.
Kabla!
I literally wanted to be Kirk growing up, my whole life. I
obviously,
was like,
you know, it's Star Wars for me, but Star Trek is really jumped up that list in the last few years thanks to those reboots.
Yeah.
I mean, Holly, are you... What is your thing? Where does Star Trek fall in that for you?
Well, I was homeschooled, and our family...
So was that?
Like, we didn't
I was too.
Do a lot of...
What is happening?
I was
and
not.
That never happens. Ever.
I was not.
Majority homeschoolers?
Right?
Wow.
Oh, just for
fate
high
school. Fate is weird. All right.
Just for high school.
I feel like
me,
I but. Joined a cult.
One of us, Aaron.
One of us.
One of us. One of us.
So you were homeschooled.
But yeah, we were a martial arts family, and we did a lot of family time, and family time at home with the television was Star Trek or Golden Girls or ER, and didn't want to watch ER, so.
Who did?
I did not want to watch ER.
So I think the inevitable thing is Homeschoolers Podcast.
Yeah, sorry, Aaron. They just I should have been homeschooled.
Damn it.
He'll be the homeschool noob.
The homeschool.
I've never been in a room where there were majority homeschoolers.
That's really weird, though.
That's weird.
Very interesting, but okay. I digress. I'm sorry.
Dave, obviously, you know, this is a great episode, but anything you want to shoot out with that?
I love it. It's a great episode. It wasn't on my like top five, but there's over 700 episodes of Star Trek. Yeah. It's really hard.
You should rank them all.
We thought about it, but
there's a website that ranks them all. I don't know if I would agree with them all, but like, that would
we'll sponsor it.
That would be a 700-minute episode if we only gave 1 minute to every episode as we're trying to rank it.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. Well, when you put it like that.
I don't think anyone will listen to it, but
oh, you did the math. If somebody watched
the math, if you did not eat, sleep, drink, go pee, unless I guess if you had
a catheter,
so if
catheter, yeah, if you had a
hospital,
if you had a catheter,
laid up,
and you know didn't have to get up to go to the bathroom, and you could if you put on every single episode of Star Trek and the movies, you'd be watching Star Trek for a month.
Okay, I can
straight.
Do that though. I thought you were gonna say a few years.
Right?
No. Like I mean, like every single. I mean, like I'm probably.
This is no sleep,
no sleep, no food,
no pooping,
no taking a break. Like not skipping the credits. Like
pooping is a deal breaker.
For most, yeah.
Well, you know, you could have an anal catheter. You know,
okay.
All right. All right. You talked me into it.
Double catheter.
Like, where do put I? Me up? Where do you sign me up?
Have
that
yeoman feed you food so you can stay alive and bring you water.
Yeah, yeoman mirrors. Yeoman mirrors.
And then like like you cannot stop watching Star. If you watch it for a month straight, you could probably get through all of it. But that's you
I'll
die
see y'all
from
in March.
You die from not sleeping. which Star Trek actually did an episode on that. It's not a great episode, but I thought it was interesting scientifically. It's like if you don't get enough REM sleep, you will die.
It'd rank in your 600s.
Yeah.
Did you get an anal catheter for that?
No, I didn't.
Okay,
well, who am I going to borrow one from?
I know.
I've had regular catheters, and I promise you, prostate exam is nothing to a catheter.
Okay, so with that being said, is there anything else that you want to bring out about Galileo 7?
It's a great episode. Watch it. Be like Josiah. If you've never seen it, you should watch it.
You should watch
Netflix.
It.
Netflix.
My question is, why do they call it the Galileo 7 when only five of them returned?
Seven
went down. Only five came back.
But it's
because
it's,
they can't call it only five came back because that was the name of the movie they copied it from.
Yeah.
It's like in Star Wars.
But it just seems stupid to call it the Galileo 7 when two died.
Maybe seven was also the designation of the ship.
It just says Galileo on the ship.
Okay, so
in the inside, in the small.
Maybe.
It's the seventh.
Like
one.
In the seats, there are little sevens.
There's seven seats in the Galileo.
No.
Makes sense, it'd be eight. But,
I think it's eight.
It's like the minivan of space.
the Galileo caravan.
Yeah, right. Caravan.
I don't know.
Caravan! The Partridge family.
Oh, just bugged me that it was the Galileo 7 and five returned. I don't know.
Five only came back.
Two came back as Gauss, though, so that's fine.
Well, they were going to call it a Galileo 7, but five came back, but that was too long,
they
cut that.
They could have called it the
Galileo. Or the Galicinco.
But why the
Galicinco?
Oh, shuttlecraft were out there.
Galocrasho.
They could have called it, oh, shuttlecraft were out there.
Galicia never.
But then they would have copied my episode, so that's fine.
Or it could have been called the big hairy ape men from Tarsus 2, but...
Man bear apes.
Oh, man.
Gigantic S spears.
Gigantic dingleberries hanging off
their
asses.
Man. They have big old dingleberries. They're huge.
Oh, that was what they used to make those big
Yeah, what was
spears.
Happening?
That's,
see,
how,
I don't
that's
think
how they attached
I
the spearheads to it.
See, if they was like, you got
to
watch the
You have
the
to
Dingleberry
watch the
7.
Dingleberries.
I'd be like, dude,
pass.
I like you. I'll see you next month. Not doing it.
No,
we're screwing geeks around. I mean, nerds of the round table. It's gone. We're not doing anything anymore.
I'm out.
I'm done.
Oh,
good night, everybody.
Good night, Adam. About the quasars. About the quasars was in 1960s, they actually discovered quasars for the first time. What happened is they first turned on radio telescopes and looked into the sky, and they would get radio waves. It would bounce off the sun, the Milky Way, and some stars. But they would get these crazy, like, readings that they couldn't understand. That was basically, it would seem like they were flashing at them, and they couldn't understand what was going on. And they called them quasi-stellar objects or quasars. So this was the 1960s. They didn't know what they were. They had no idea. So this was the first time. So 1967, when the show came out,
they were still new.
They had no idea what quasars were. Like, besides just this extremely unusual phenomenon.
Which is why Kirk would obviously need to study it.
So, and they even wondered if was this like an alien civilization that was like somehow communicating. That's how they didn't understand what this was.
Yeah.
So in the 1980s, they agreed that these were actually active galaxies. Now, here's the interesting thing. So, obviously, we know what the Milky Way galaxy, it's a big spiral spinning around, and in the middle is a supermassive black hole. And that's what keeps us, you know, spinning in the circle and all our planets and solar systems staying in that same area. What a quasar is the same idea, except we're seeing on a slight angle tilt, and we're only seeing parts of it. So all of that light is we're only seeing parts of it, and the parts that shoot out in different directions. So think of like something that shoots up from the north and south pole of the Milky Way.
Yeah, it just shoots out this crazy fireworks show.
Right. So that's what we see with a quasar. Now, if it's turned directly towards us, so if you're seeing the quasar right in front of your face, it's called a blazar, where it's shooting the radioactive, you know...
Right into your face.
Right into your face, and that's why you see it.
In the face.
Right in the face!
Sound like you're naming members of the dodgeball team.
We are. Blazar, quasar, and pulsar. Now, So
if you can dodge a pulsar, you can dodge a quasar.
So now the Milky Way doesn't have this phenomenon because we don't actually have enough matter in the middle of our supermassive black hole to make this. Now, it could happen. They say when the Andromeda galaxy in whatever 10 billion years crashes
merges into our
into
galaxy.
Our galaxy, that will happen. But right now, it's not happening with us.
But we still don't see it because we're not, A, dead, but B, we're still in the same galaxy, so it's going to be hard to see the shoot.
And we'll probably be extinct.
The shoot off without being in another galaxy.
We'll find out in Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In 2 short months.
But that's, and so technically, a quasar happening, the Mirasaka 3-2-1 or 3-1-2 or whatever.
If you fall into the middle of quasar, you are dead.
They would be in a different galaxy. So it doesn't really make sense on that part, but they said quasar-like phenomenon.
Sure.
So who knows what the hell.
I would have never questioned it.
So that's what we do at Synthaholics. We question the facts.
A little bit of facts behind the fiction.
So anyway, so there you go. I love this episode. This is a great episode where you get to see a character study on Spock. It's because Spock is probably one of the most quintessential characters of Star Trek.
Most well-known. Probably even more well-known
than Kirk.
More well-known than Kirk, yeah.
Yeah. And it's great to see it. So I love seeing him. And when you think of Spock, you think logical and he gets everything right. He was not getting it right. And that's what the greatest part about this. All of a sudden you see someone who seems seemingly flawless making mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
It's an awesome thing to see.
Well, he did everything he meant to do.
No, but it wasn't turning out right.
Yeah.
It's a miscalculation because things weren't turning out in the way and we all do that, but it's great to see him imperfect.
Almost shows that human element in a way.
Yeah. And that's great. It's great about him. That's good. So, and that's the also cool thing about Spock constantly is that you do see the human element inside him even when he's being Vulcan.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I agree.
Great. It's great.
Makes him a great character.
Yeah, great character indeed. So,
most definitely.
He's like an onion.
He's got layers.
Layers.
When he smells bad,
makes me cry.
Well, actually, Vulcans think everyone smells. They think humans smell bad. They've got an eccentric sense of smell.
Oh, I call that rude.
Yeah. Well, all our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. Again, we're Synthaholics.com. You can email us at SynthaholicDuo. Again, where can we find everybody? Josiah.
I'm at Josiah D. Leroy on Twitter. You can find my company, The Geekiverse, at _Geekiverse on Twitter. Also... quick plug, a clean plug this time, if you will. We'll see you at Buffalo Soup Fest on January 28th. We are sponsoring a certain section that I won't tell you about, but you'll see us walking around.
I'm not going to say anything.
Don't you stop it, Mr. So. Thank you, David and Aaron, for having me again. Every time we get together, magic happens.
It's fun.
Do you believe in magic?
This is a good crew right here.
And I hope you do. Tell us about
Holly's
Holly.
Been fantastic.
I'm Holly Michelle, and you can find me at Holly Michelle V on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm also at hollymichelle.iconvoice.com, and I'm with the Artful Gremlins, which you can find on Twitter as well, and a Patreon for the Artful Gremlins.
Yes. Awesome. You can find me at BlackBird2004 Twitter. You can tweet me anytime, and I will get back to you whatever you want to talk to me about.
Yeah, I will get back to you too, David_J_Duncan. We're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, wherever you listen to your podcasts, you can find us. And be sure to listen to the Geekiverse on their podcast, The Art of Gremlins, with their Nerdonomicon and Artful
Couldn't Be Models.
Especially because we're going to be doing the Geeks. The nerds of the round table.
The K-nerds.
The K-nerds of the round table, which will be starting on the Geekiverse. Look for that soon. You'll be hearing more of Aaron and I on another show. So it'll be... The Geeks of
the Round Table. Or David always a good thing.
We'll be coming around to our show too eventually.
Unless there are children around. At which point, turn it off.
We're sorry.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, my friends.
Shit up, pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Recording.
I'm not recording!
There's always one.
Oh my gosh.
Coming to you from Shibar Global Sheet Vault.
The coldest place in all of Oregon is
the coldest place to record the podcast.
Temperature to geek this.
Yeah, work that one in somehow.